While waiting for his dizzy spell to pass, I looked up at the twin statues. Neither was paying the slightest heed. Both were wearing white toupees and white shoulder pads, and Scientish's snow globe now looked less like a basketball and more like a big frosted cupcake. A freshening wind coming up the hill was beginning to ruffle its icing. I noticed the professor looking up, too. Suddenly, in a loud voice, he began addressing the statue of letters.
"Throw away your book, madam. Toss it out in the street. It's useless. So are you. You're no maiden anymore. You're a useless old hag. Oh, just hop down off that pedestal and hit the road."
"Come on, Professor, let's go. The traffic lights are with us. We've got to cross." With a drunk's belligerence, he pushed me away and then shakily hand-walked his way around to where he could address the other statue. He stood up straighter and then, with a mock salute and in a Roman oratorical voice, he said,
"All hail to you, conquering lad of science. It's your ball game, isn't it? Your ball, and so it's your game."
"Come on, Professor." He ignored me.
"It's your ball, so it's your game. If you decide to take it and go home, know what happens?"
"Professor, come on."
"Know what happens?"
"No."
"This whole city shuts down. That's what. Like that. This old game stops."
He pointed at letters.
"Whereas you, letters, whereas you, do you know what happens if you take your book and go home? What do you think?"
"Come on, Professor."
"Absolutely nothing. In fact, she can take her book and throw it into that pothole at the street and jump in after it, and nobody will notice a thing. Except maybe one pothole's less bumpy, that's all."
I said, "But isn't that the purpose of literature? To make our potholes less bumpy?" This was the kind of statement the professor would have ordinarily jumped all over with praise and agreement. I tried asking him, "Why don't you tell me what's wrong? Did you get fired or something? Did you have a manuscript returned?"
"Want to know? You want to know? It's not that simple. I'll show you as soon as we get there. I'll show you when we get there. As soon as we get there. Go on, lead the way. It's turning cold."
He let me take his arm again, and we made it across Broadway in halves, having to wait in the median strip for a second walk sign. Thereafter, I had to apply the brakes as we descended the hill towards Riverside Park. He had stopped talking altogether. Either he was cold or his moroseness had taken hold again. Or maybe he was passing into the next stage of drunkenness. Riding up to his apartment in the elevator, he finally spoke up again, his speech even more slurred and nearly unintelligible.
"Some things we do in life, Parker, we're not very proud of. Our biological instincts get the better of us. Mother Nature's perverse. First, she supplies the urge, then she supplies the temptation. And then when we succumb, the punishment, not always swift, but always certain, sooner or later it catches up."
"What big sin did you commit, Professor? What big sin did you commit?"
"There's a side to me you don't know about yet. You're about to."
Such was his promise, however, he never got around to fulfilling it. He passed out just as he was stepping off the elevator. I saw it coming and was able to catch him and ease him to the floor. I then dragged him the rest of the way off and lay him down on his back while trying to determine what to do next. I would have preferred carrying him the rest of the way, but I couldn't manage it alone, and I didn't want to summon help and subject him to future embarrassment. So I sat him up by the shoulders of his coat and hiked up his collar so it would act like a sling for his head, and then dragged him the rest of the way down the hall to his apartment door, his heels clicking over the mosaic tiles as we went. No point in knocking on the door. Professor Hopkins was a solitary bachelor. His students were his family. I got his key out, unlocked the door, and dragged him inside. He regained some consciousness at this point and was able to mutely assist me in helping him stagger to his feet. I then steered him from behind as he ambulated towards the only light that was left on in the apartment, the ceiling light in his bedroom. I stood him up beside his bed, steadying him with one hand while I reached down with the other and pulled back the bedspread and covers before he sat down with a plop. Once I got his arms out of his coat, I tossed the coat on a chair. I then encouraged him to fall over onto his side. He fell sideways while also pitching forward as he went. However, I was able to prevent him from ending up on the floor. Instead, he landed on the bed with his head mostly on the pillow. I took his shoes off and swung his legs up, causing him to roll over onto his back. Mm-mm, not good. I rolled him onto his side again and bent his knees so he stayed in that position, and then for added measure propped one of his pillows behind his back and another in front of his chest. I covered him with the bedspread, switched on his bedside lamp, and muted its brightness with a hand towel, turned off the ceiling light and got him a glass of water from his bathroom sink. I put it on his nightstand and then placed a metal wastebasket at the side of his bed, just in case. I watched to see how he was breathing. His eyelids were not fluttering. He didn't appear to be dreaming, but he did appear to be asleep. When he began to snore loudly, I figured it was safe to let myself out. However, as I did, I felt I was leaving behind the big unanswered question. What was the dark secret that the professor had been on the verge of revealing? It had been something he was going to show me, but what?